Well, good morning. I too want to greet you all in Jesus' name this morning. Welcome everyone here, all of you visitors. Welcome to be here with us this morning. I have a question this morning in place of the title or for the title of the message. And the question is this: are you ashamed of the gospel of Christ? A simple question for all of us to think about. The one verse, I don't know if it's my text verse or not. There's two verses that I've centered my mind around. But the one verse is in Romans 1, verse 16. It's Paul here, and this is what he says. He says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek." And we'll probably come back to Romans 1 and read some of the later verses in this chapter. I don't know what your thoughts are. I don't know if you have an answer to that question as you analyze your own heart. And you think about, am I ashamed of the gospel of Christ? Maybe you're not sure. Maybe you don't know what all that means. But I know that sitting here this morning in a setting like this, in a church house, surrounded by many believing brothers and sisters, the question is fairly easy to answer. Often it's, I don't feel no shame. I'm glad to identify with Christ. We're a little bit like Peter before Jesus went to the cross, when Jesus was talking about some of those things, and Peter said, he said, "You know, though I should die with thee, I will not, yet will I not deny thee." But it was just a short few hours later that Peter was denying the Lord. He denied Him three times. He said he didn't even know the man in his denial. So I'd like us to think about this question, and I want to dig into this a little bit this morning. Go below the surface and check your own hearts and check my own hearts, because I think this is a very important question. The answer to this depends upon how we live life here, the amount of victory we're going to have in our Christian life, the power that's mentioned in Romans 1, verse 16, and ultimately our eternal destination. Something happened to me about 7 months ago. I guess, I don't know, I think this is maybe where this message first started to really become more into my consciousness. I know I've thought of this probably before. But over the last year, we have been doing quite a bit of construction work over there at what used to be David Gingrich's farm, and it's where Dustin Nichols lives now, renovating those barns. And last spring, we were working on pouring concrete inside of those buildings. They need concrete floors in them. They're 400 feet long. They're low. You can't get a concrete truck in them. So the only good way is to get a line pump. And many of you are familiar with that, and some of you probably are not. But a concrete line pump is just simply a way to pump this cement mix, this concrete, to where you need to go. There's a pump outside with a hoses you run all the way through the barn. We went to the center of the barn, so 200 feet of hose. And then that machine pumps that concrete all the way to where you need it. And if you know even a little bit about concrete, the one thing that you know is that there's always a sense of urgency, because you are on a time frame. You have got, from the time that concrete truck shows up, you have a certain amount of time before that concrete's going to get hard. To get it placed, to get it leveled, to get it floated, to get it where you want it to be. And when there's a concrete pump on site, it's just one more piece to the puzzle. It's just one more thing that can go wrong. Because you got trucks, you might have 50 yards on the road between the mix and the pump. And if the pump breaks down, you have all these trucks. With what are you going to do with the concrete if this thing doesn't work? So this morning, this particular morning, early in the morning before daylight, we were trying to pump this concrete. And the line pump just kept jamming, plugging, banging on those joints, taking pipes apart, emptying them out, adding chemicals into the concrete to try to get this stuff to flow. And it was a little bit bigger deal than normal. Often you hit a little bit of one of these things and then pretty soon you get rolling. But this, the time just went on and it was, we weren't getting real far. And so I was, what can you do? You help, you're with the pump operator there. And so I was praying. I was like, we need help here. We need to get this concrete going. But I remember in that time, for some reason, and that's how God works in us sometimes. It's different from day to day and situation to situation. But I remember having this feeling, this thought, that maybe I should just stop. You know, there's concrete truck guys there. There's the pump. There's the screed. There's all of my crew. Maybe we should just stop and publicly pray for this situation. Well, but I didn't know. I didn't want to cause a scene. I wasn't sure if that was the right thing to do. And you probably know how this is. Once you start having those thoughts in your mind, you're a little bit not sure. You start arguing with yourself, reasoning with yourself. Guys walking around in boots, some of them not Christians. Maybe it's just showing off to pray publicly. So, I just keep praying to myself, praying to God quietly, fervently. And kept kind of just not wanting to do that, not wanting to make a public notice or scene of the situation and ask God for help. And finally, somehow, in spite of my disobedience, God had mercy and the concrete started pumping. And we got the job done. We pumped it all out. It turned out fine. But I didn't forget. And I felt bad. I felt a little bit ashamed. I wasn't sure. Here I was, a minister of the gospel, the boss on the job, that had no one to fear. I was paying the bills. There was no one to offend. I mean, everything was set up right. There was no reason why I should be ashamed. What was wrong with me? Well, the past was the past. I couldn't change it. I didn't know what to do. I just went on. Well, so happened that we had back-to-back pours that week. We did one half the barn that morning. We were going to do the next half the barn the next morning. So I was thinking about that then. Well, tomorrow's another pour. I didn't know for sure what to do. The next morning, early, I got up before I went to that pour and was reading my Bible. And I was reading in Mark, the 8th chapter, and if you want to turn to that, you can. Mark chapter 8. And I got reading through that story, and I got to verse 38. And this is what the verse says. It says, the words of Jesus. He said, "Whosoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he cometh in the glory of his Father with his holy angels." Wow. I was convicted, and yet there was a side of me that was excited. I felt like God was speaking to me. I felt like he was aware. I felt like maybe he was working in my life. And so I purposed in my heart that morning that I was going to pray publicly with the guys. And I can't remember the details, but I think maybe just before we even got started, let's just pray. Try to be obedient to the Lord. And so we did. And the Lord did bless that morning. The concrete pumping went fairly well. Turned out good. But that really wasn't the point. whether the concrete pumping went well. I didn't know if it would be any better, for sure. But the point was, on that dark, early morning, outside of the church building, on the job site, with non-Christians around, was I ashamed of the gospel of Christ? Was I willing to identify with Him? And the point isn't that we need to always make a public appearance to prove that we're not ashamed or to say a lot of words. But the point is, deep in our hearts, are we ashamed to be identified with Christ? Am I willing to speak for Him if the opportunity comes? If I know that I should, when I see that there's a need? And I don't think that concrete pumper will ever forget that. Concrete, if you know much about concrete crews in the real world, they're a very rough group of people most of the time, from what I understand. And that I've seen that concrete pump operator different times, and he's mentioned, and he's even asked, maybe we should pray, and he's referred back to that time. And since that time, experience, I've often come back to that verse in my life in Romans 1:16, where Paul says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. It is the power of God unto salvation to all who believe, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek." And I let that truth of that verse recalibrate my heart as I'm out in the world and I'm out doing things and as I'm not thinking about things of Christ directly. And I believe it is a powerful verse. And like I said earlier, it is easy to sit here when you're surrounded with people that think like you do and understand why you do what you do, and not be ashamed. But what about when we're making the business deals with the businessman and the big money and the bankers? Or the truck driver, if you're in the container yard, and the longshoreman. Sitting at Applebee's having supper or at the local coffee shop. Are you ashamed of the gospel of Christ? What causes us to be ashamed? What caused me to not want to do what I did besides all my excuses that I made? I think one of the primary things, it's a pretty simple thing, is just the fear of man. What are people going to think? What are people going to think about me? Not that they can do anything. Not that it makes any difference. But we as humans are so oriented that way. We care about what people think about us. We worry about that. It's amazing sometimes and embarrassing how cheap we will sell out to the loyalty of Christ, to people that we barely know, people that aren't Christian, people that don't have a part in our life, all because we're worried about what they're going to think. The fear of man will drive us to spiritual bankruptcy if we allow that to be in our lives. Now there's another thing I want to think about here, and I don't know where your mind have been when you think about whether you're ashamed of the gospel of Christ. And I want you to think here, because I'm going to turn a little bit of a corner here maybe and be focusing on an aspect of this. And maybe you're already here. But the question is not, are you ashamed of Jesus? That's one question. Another question, the real question that I want to focus on most of the time is, are you ashamed of the gospel of Christ? And there's a difference. There are many, many people in the world today that are not ashamed of Jesus. They'll gladly pray to Him. They'll gladly sing to Him. They'll gladly identify with Him. They'll even pray in public boldly and do those kind of things. But what about the gospel of Christ? The words of Christ? And you'll notice that, we'll read that, in that verse that I read in Mark 38, Jesus said, "Whosoever there shall be ashamed of me and my words," it specifically says. What is the gospel? What is the good news? You know, if you ask many people today, what is the gospel? What do you mean by the gospel? Well, technically, the definition is just the good news, the message. Well, what is the message? Often it's that Jesus came to die for my sins. He suffered and died on the cross, that I can be forgiven and I can go with Him to heaven. Is that the gospel that Christ preached? You know, those things are facts. Those things are real. Those things are part of the gospel, the message. But Jesus, that was not the thrust. That was not the summary of the gospel of Christ. And I want to back up now, if you're still here, at Mark 8. And I want to read some of these previous verses that give us the context and a little bit about, and try to draw a few thoughts from this passage here. I want to start reading at verse 31, 27. 27. So let's listen to this as Jesus interacts with His disciples here. Jesus went out and His disciples into the town of Caesarea Philippi. And by the way, He asked His disciples, saying among them, "Who do men say that I am?" And they answered, "John the Baptist, and some say Elijah, and others, one of the prophets." And He saith unto them, "But whom say ye that I am?" And Peter answered and said unto Him, "Thou art the Christ." And He charged them that He should tell no man of Him. And He began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected of the elders and of the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and after 3 days rise again. And He spake that saying openly, and Peter took Him and began to rebuke Him. And when He had turned about and looked on His disciples, He rebuked Peter, saying, "Get thee behind me, Satan, for thou hast savorest not the things that be of God, but the things that be of men." And when He had called the people unto Him with His disciples also, He said unto them, "Whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man if he should gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Whosoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he cometh in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." You know, those are serious thoughts. I'd like you to think about just a little bit. I don't know if you have ever thought about or imagined this scenario. To come to the end of life, thinking that you had been a pretty good Christian, you had lived morals, you had never been involved in pornography, you had never been excommunicated, you always wore the right clothes, you lived a good moral life. You get to heaven, and I don't know how that scene will be, but we'll stand before Christ, and Jesus is standing there. And he's looking at each person that comes. And I get there, and He looks at me. And He's thinking. And He says, "Yeah, I remember you. You were ashamed of me. You wouldn't identify with me. You wouldn't identify with my church. You wouldn't identify with my words." Depart. And I don't know, another place Jesus says, "I never knew you." And I'm not sure how that will be. But that to me is one of the greatest fears that I can imagine. And we have been in places where we thought somebody should know me. We have been friends before. "Don't you remember me?" And they just look at you with a blank look. And they say, "I don't know who you are. Where are you? Where are you from?" And you hope the lights will come on and they say, "Oh yes, I remember you. But to have that with Jesus and the lights never come on, and he can't place you. He doesn't know who you are. That is the picture that I have. If we are ashamed of Christ in this life and His words and the message that He presented, and do not want to identify with that, He will be ashamed of us. And in looking at Peter's life here, I want you to notice when the first section, when Jesus is asking His disciples, "Who do men think that I am?" And they answered, and He said, "Well, who do you think that I am?" And Peter said, "You're the Christ." Peter was right on at verse 30. Peter had passed. He was doing well. But then Jesus started teaching. Jesus started saying the words of what needs to happen, of the life that needs to live. And that's when Peter failed the test. That's when Peter rebuked Christ, admonished Him. He said, "You know, you don't need to do that, Jesus. You don't need to go to the cross. You don't need to suffer." And Peter, I'm sure it was out of the goodness of his heart. He was trying to help his friend. He probably envisioned a kingdom on earth, a conquering, a earthly kingdom. And so Peter was just trying to help. He was trying to come up with a better solution to still get to where he thought they should be going. But we see Jesus' response, and he seems to just almost be edgy about it. And I think possibly the reason was is Jesus was already in agony. He was already facing this temptation and this struggle of going to the cross. And he didn't want to do that. He was tempted to go another way possibly. And now his close friend is coming along and saying, "You know, really, you could maybe you should do another way. You don't need to do that." And Jesus rebuked him and said, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Out of the goodness of Peter's heart, he was being used by the devil to tempt Jesus. And I believe that is still a method that the devil uses today. There's a lot of us that are big-hearted, compassionate pastors and people that are trying to help people and help them find their way. And that is good. That is how it should be. But there is no other way. There is no other way to bypass the message of the gospel of Christ. And Jesus says it here. Three things. If you do not deny yourself, if you do not take up your cross, and if you do not follow me, you will not be my disciple. There is no other way. And that is not a popular way. That is not to deny yourself. It's not fun for me. It's not fun to teach. It's not what people want to hear. Follow me is not fun. Obedience. Are we ashamed to identify with the simplicity of the gospel? Unapologetically. The message of the gospel is not complicated. It's not hard to understand. But it costs everything. The devil is still trying to convince everyone that there's an easier way. There's a smarter way. There's a way that's more logical. There's a way that with enough wisdom and enlightenment. And so many people get sucked into this. And like Peter, we find ourselves doing the same thing. We intend well. We try to make it easier for others to enter the kingdom, to help ease the struggle a little bit. And we need to be careful about that, I think. I think there's a place for that. I think we should lift up the hands that hang down and the feeble knees and clear the paths and try to do our part. But you know, just like that miracle of the caterpillar that turns into a butterfly, and we've all heard of this illustration probably, of metamorphosis, it's called, where the little crawling cocoon, caterpillar turns into a cocoon. And I want to just read a little bit about that, a story about a little boy that had this cocoon. He had a caterpillar. I won't read everything. I'll just kind of cut in here some a little bit. But he had a caterpillar in a jar. And one day the caterpillar climbed up the stick and started acting strangely. The boy worriedly called his mother, who came and understood that the caterpillar was creating a cocoon. The mother explained to the boy how the caterpillar was going to go through metamorphosis and become a butterfly. The little boy was thrilled to hear about the changes of his caterpillar that he would go through. He watched every day, waiting for the butterfly to emerge. One day it happened. A small hole appeared in the cocoon, and the butterfly started to struggle to come out. At first, the boy was excited, but soon he became concerned. The butterfly was struggling so hard to get out, it looked like it couldn't break free. It looked desperate. It looked like it was making no progress. The boy was so concerned that he decided to help. He ran to get a scissors. He came back. He snipped the cocoon to make the hole a little bigger, and the butterfly quickly emerged. As the butterfly came out, the boy was surprised. It had a swollen body and small shriveled wings. He continued to watch the butterfly, expecting that at any moment the wings would dry out, enlarge and expand to support the swollen body. He knew that in time the body would shrink and the butterfly's wings would expand. But neither happened. The butterfly spent the rest of its life crawling around with a swollen body and shriveled wings. It never was able to fly. As the boy tried to figure out what had gone wrong, his mother took him to talk to a scientist at a local college. He learned that the butterfly was supposed to struggle. In fact, the butterfly's struggle to push its way through the tiny opening of the cocoon pushes the fluid out of the body and into the wings. Without the struggle, the butterfly would never, ever fly. The boy's good intentions hurt the butterfly. Basic illustration of the point that I'm trying to make. We care so much, we mean so well, but let's never short-circuit the struggling process in the Christian life. To die to ourselves, to take up our cross, and to follow Him. You know, we are just like a worm, like the caterpillar in the flesh. There's only one way through that. And I understand the caterpillar that goes into a cocoon, I don't know how that all works, but it kind of dies of its old self and digests itself and turns into a new creature. And there is not enough wisdom. There is not enough meetings. There is not enough accountability. There is not enough counseling sessions or teaching programs to teach a caterpillar how to fly. The only way is the way that God designed it. And I think we need to not be ashamed of that. Not be ashamed that we need to struggle sometimes. That is part of the gospel. I think a temptation I want to talk a little bit about, a part of the gospel is, I mentioned the simplicity of the gospel. And in our day, you know, wisdom, reasoning, a lot of those things I have a high value on them. Logic, and I enjoy that too. I like that. But I think that we need to be careful with the gospel of Christ. It is not always logical from the human standpoint. And in 1 Corinthians 1:18, he says, I'll just read a couple verses here, but you could read several there that fit. It says, "For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which are saved it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent." And I think there's a part that we just must accept. That in the lost society around us, and the neighbors that do not know Christ, do not want Christ, or whoever those people are, we are going to appear foolish to them. That doesn't feel good. We don't like that. We like to be smart. But there's just a part of the gospel message that is foolishness to the lost. And unless we are willing to identify with that and to be willing to be foolish in the eyes of some people and not be ashamed. The other thing I mentioned a little bit, Jesus says here, in this passage, He said, "Follow Me." And I'll just say this a little bit again. Just, you know, it depends which side of the tracks you're coming from, in a sense, I suppose. But I think in the world of society, the view of obedience, I know it can be overemphasized, but in our world and the culture that we live in, follow me. You know, we love Christ. We'll put a cross around our neck. We're glad that He died and shed His blood for my sins. But that part of following Christ and the gospel, obedience. Am I ashamed to just obey? Unquestionably, obey. To the Bible, to God's authority that He has given to us. You know, when we simply obey without question, what does it make you feel like? I think sometimes we feel ashamed, we feel childish, we feel naive, we feel unwise. Maybe legalistic. But I think that there's a beauty in actual obedience. I'm not talking blind. Like I said, it depends where you're coming from. I think that, I suppose, can get overemphasized. But in the world in which we live, by and large, it is not wise to just obey. You don't obey the police officers without question. You don't obey anybody without questioning their authority and their motives and why they're telling me what to do. And I think that presses in upon us. It's in our human nature. Satan has done that from the beginning in the Garden of Eden, to question obedience to something. I want to go back to Romans 1, where I started there, and read a few verses there. And I think Romans 1 is pictures our society so much in the last part of Romans there. And are we willing to call, be ashamed? Are we ashamed to call sin sin? And Romans 1 here, I want to just start reading, jump in at verse 22. This is kind of after what Paul said, so it's connected to his thought here that I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, he said. It's the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believes. And then he goes on to talk about the condition of man. And verse 22, we see this thing about the desire to be wise again in society. Verse 22, I'm going to read through some of these verses here. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And another thing I want you to think about is the word changed here. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into the image made like to corruptible man, to birds, to four-footed beasts, to creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own heart, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. For this cause God gave them up to the vile affections, for even the women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. Likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the men, women burned in their lusts one toward another, men with men, working which is unseemly and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which is meat. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy and murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, and disobedient to parents, without understanding, covetous breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. And the thing I want to think about here a little bit is, it is not popular to call something right and to be able to call something wrong in our society today. To have moral absolutes. Something that can't be questioned. Something that can't be tampered with. That cannot be reasoned. That cannot be coming from a different angle. That it depends on the situation. But just black and white. It's sin. It's right. Moral absolutes. Is that just for the simple? Is it just for the naive and the uneducated? You know, it's a lot wiser in our society if you can always muddle the situation with questions. You can always somehow undermine the thing to where I don't have an answer, but I can place questions in everything that you believe. Somehow. And I think that is part of the devil's tactic. He doesn't have to explain how it works. He doesn't have to have an answer. But there's very many people that are good at just planting seeds of doubt and questioning it. No moral absolutes. And you see that? I would have never believed that 10 years ago, I don't think, that there would come to a point where the gender that you were born with is up for debate. And I think, what is left? If that is not an absolute, if that is not a truth, what is? And that is just an example of our society that has undermined, has eroded, tried to the foundation of everything so that there's no absolutes. It started with creation before. It's been a deteriorating process. And this whole thing, I think, comes home a little bit closer to us. If we have the attitude, are we unashamedly, can we say that divorce and remarriage is wrong? It's adultery. That's what Jesus said. Or whatever you want to say. Or do we always have to say, well, it depends. I have to think about this thing and I've got to be careful because I don't want to look too simple. Are we ashamed to call sin, sin? And are we ashamed to call people to repentance? That is another thing that I think, you know, the gospel message, Jesus, John the Baptist, from the very beginning, you talk about the love of Jesus. But the very first message that he said, and I think in Matthew 4, maybe around 17, repent, for the kingdom of God is at hand. That was it. A 9-word message. Repent. And repentance, I believe, is a big part of the gospel. You know, I think one thing though I maybe would like to say is that I've seen the other side, I believe, where being unashamed of the gospel of Christ is not being rude, is not being a jerk, is not being unkind. That is not proving that you're unashamed. And I think we need to not fall into that. I think that we need to not think that if I pass out 3 tracts every day, then I'm not ashamed. And we get into these things. I would like us to think about it from the heart. We need to get to the point where we're really not ashamed. We don't really care if it doesn't matter if it works out, if we pass out a track or if we don't pass out a track. We're willing to pass out a track, but we don't have to. Sometimes we'll say something, sometimes we don't. But the foundation is that we're not ashamed. And we can live in peace in our hearts. We want to identify with Christ. And I think that that is something that a trap maybe that we need to not fall into. Most of us probably won't. So you probably don't need to put too much emphasis on that. But Paul, we think of Paul as, and sometimes preachers, I don't know how you think of Jason and older men that are just, you know, they're bold. They won't have a problem being ashamed. But I think it's interesting, in Ephesians 6, even Paul, which is, happens to be the one that wrote that verse in Romans, about he's not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, he said. But in Ephesians 6, there's several verses there that I think it's just good for us to realize that even Paul was a human being. And every preacher and every old man and old lady, I think we face this and we struggle with this. And he says here in Ephesians 6:18, he's saying, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance, and supplications for the saints. And for me, that utterance may be given unto me, that I may open my mouth boldly, and to make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in bonds, that therein I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. You know, as long as we are in the flesh, I think there's going to be that little bit of a working through this situation. It's going to take discernment. I think it's going to take staying close to the Lord is probably the single most best thing that you can do to prepare for this. To really not be ashamed of the Christ. But Paul here is even like saying, pray for me. I need the prayers. I struggle with this sometimes. I need the boldness to say and do what I need to say sometimes. In closing here, I want to read it's a letter. And I couldn't remember. I don't think it was read here. I forget sometimes where I've heard things or read things. And I don't know if it came over this pulpit, but I guess it doesn't matter either way. But this was a letter that was written by a young pastor in Zimbabwe after he was martyred. He was killed for his faith in Jesus. This letter was found in his desk. It is called The Fellowship of the Unashamed. The die has been cast. The decision has been made. I've stepped over the line. I won't look back, let up, slow down, or back away. My past is redeemed. My presence makes sense. My future is secure. I am finished with low living, sight walking, small planning, smooth knees, colorless dreams, tamed visions, mundane talking, cheap giving, and dwarfed goals. I no longer need preeminence, prosperity, promotion, position, plaudits, or popularity. I don't need to be right, first, tops, recognized, praised, regarded, or rewarded. I now live by the faith, lean on His presence, walk by patience. I live by prayer and labor with power. My face is set, my gate is fast, my goal is heaven, my road is narrow. My way is rough, my companions are few. My guide is reliable, my mission is clear. I cannot be bought, compromised, detoured, lured away, turned back, deluded, or delayed. I will not flinch in the face of sacrifice, hesitate in the presence of the adversary, negotiate at the table of the enemy, ponder at the pool of popularity, or meander in the maze of mediocrity. I won't give up, shut up, let up, until I have stayed up, stored up, prayed up, paid up, spoken up for the cause of Christ. I am a disciple of Jesus Christ. I must go till He comes, give till I drop, preach till all know, and work till He stops me. And when He comes for His own, He will have no trouble recognizing me. My banner is clear. I am a part of the fellowship of the unashamed. Is that a testimony for all of us? Are we a part of the fellowship of the unashamed? And this man proved that. He proved these words that he wrote by dying for the gospel of Christ. And I want all of us here to be able to say, as a church, as individuals, like Paul said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. So when God, Christ returns, let's make sure that we are a part of the fellowship of the unashamed. Let's have a closing song.